amplifier votre passion pour la guitare pour quelques euros par mois. Rendez-vous sur lachaineguitare.com. Amplify your passion for the guitar for a few dollars per month. Head over to theguitarchannel.biz. Welcome to the Guitar Channel. I am super happy to welcome you a new interview. I am with the one and only Nir Felder on the other side of the Skype connection. Nir, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good, man. It's good to be here, hanging with you, talking with you.
Yeah. Where are you based at the moment? Is that still New York, or I don't quite remember? Yeah?
I'm in Brooklyn, New York. Yeah, I've been here for the last 15 years.
Mm-hmm. What is the situation at the moment in New York City with the crazy situation we are at the moment?
You know, we're doing a lot better than we were. I think our positive test rate has been under 1% for weeks now.
Mm-hmm.
So we're doing really well, actually. But for us musicians, you know, we still can't play gigs. We can't. There's a lot we can't do because of the dangers of performing indoors in closed spaces. So kind of our opportunities to make music are more limited than
right.
But overall, the city's doing well, and I'm thrilled about that.
Okay, that's good to hear. What was the immediate impact of the pandemic on your life as your musician? I guess you had many concerts canceled all the summer and spring. Was a disaster, I suppose.
Sure. Yeah. You know, I'm on the road a lot. I tour a lot in normal times. So yes, I've been home more than I've ever been in these last 15 years. In some ways it's been nice. In other ways it's been challenging. But the main way it's impacted me is that I'm not on the road.
Mm-hmm.
I used to be in an airport, you know, twice a week at least, you know, for the whole year. And that is not been the case.
Okay, so how did you adapt? So you just mentioned that you maybe produced more music. We're going to talk about your new album. So what was the other adaptation you did to your life as a musician?
As a musician, well, you know, I've been teaching a lot. I teach college classes, which I always do, even normally, but now we're doing it all online. What I did at the beginning of the pandemic, which, you know, none of us realized the scope of it at that time, how long it would last, I said I was going to give free lessons every day for 30 days. You know, so for the first, I thought that would cover it. I thought, you
okay.
know,
that's plenty.
Be on to the next thing. But so I did that for 30 days. And, you know, after that, I was doing 2 free lessons a day for 30 days. After that, I took a little break from teaching. I just wanted to work on my stuff and, you know, kind of go inside and use the opportunity to see what, you know, had to come out. But I found for myself, you know, it's very difficult for me to be fully invested in music when everything grinds to a halt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I thrive off the social aspect of it. You know, the fact that, like, you know, in jazz improvisation or even in any style of music, you know, I'm really playing to the people I'm playing with. You know, we play differently every night in every city based on the room, based on the mood, based on the energy. So without that, you know, I did my best to practice and keep writing and doing all that things, but it wasn't really until the college semester started again about 2 weeks ago that I could, you know, fully jump in again, I felt, because there were people counting on me to be fully there.
Mm-hmm.
There were, you know, we were all in the same situation where we were just like really grateful for an opportunity to jump back in and seize the moment, seize the initiative and be fully invested in music again. So that's been great. Before that, I did some live stream shows. I did do a few recording sessions, and there are some outdoor concerts, but they're not, you know, happening with the regularity that they did in my former life, which was thankfully very busy. So, the teaching has kind of reinvigorated me in the meantime. I do have, like, a new album out, like you mentioned, so I was doing some live stream shows for that. I was, I've done some new videos. There's a new video coming out, you know, so there's been a lot of artistic activity that's still happening, but to be honest, you know, for me, without the social aspect, it's harder.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we musicians, I don't know, I feel like we're a real community and we feed off each other and build off each other. And the virtual thing is part of it now. It's become a part of it. But for someone like me that grew up in the physical, you know, just playing a lot of shows, hanging out with musicians, getting together and recording live in the studio with other musicians, I thrive off that.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any idea when you will be able to play again, kind of normally, or no clue at the moment?
I don't know. I wouldn't assume it's going to happen anytime soon. I think that we might have a full year left. I'm not sure, or more. It's going to be when it's going to be, and in the meantime, you know, it is a great opportunity to explore, to study more, to go back and take care of things that were maybe hard to address when you were so busy, when we were all busy. Maybe you have like a piece of technology you would like to program. You want to get into your Kemper or your Fractal or something that just takes a little time to adapt to. Now would be the time to do something like that. Or there's something in your playing you'd like to work on. So it's a great time to do things like that. You know, there's many silver linings if we take them. It just takes a shift of your point of view.
Yeah. And I think we just have to adapt to the situation anyway. It's not like we have a lot of option anyway. So we have to reinvent the way we work, the way we live, the way we interact, and so on. So that's, I think, the right way to look at things. Because if we keep saying, okay, my God, what are we going to become? No more concert anymore. And we are all are going to die. So we are all going to die anyway. So let's try to make the most out of this strange situation. That's for sure.
You can't fight it. You can't fight it. So if you go with the flow of it and, you know, take advantage of what is available, you might make a beautiful thing out of it. Mm-hmm. But if you try to fight it, it's a bit hopeless.
Yeah.
You know, it's bigger than any of us.
Regarding your teaching, so does that mean that you do all your teaching remotely via Zoom and things like that at the moment, yeah?
Absolutely. It's all remote, and I think that in the past we've looked at, you know, the remote, you know, giving lessons over Zoom or Skype or whatever as like a inferior thing that, like, you know, had to replace the real thing because the real thing wasn't available. Maybe a student was in Argentina and they wanted to take a lesson in New York, but, you know, the technology brought us together. Now, I think since the option really isn't there, we're looking at it differently. We're like saying, this is what it is and what it's going to be. So I think we're kind of investing a little more to make the experience better. And I think we've all learned, both as students and as teachers, how to do that. And I'm feeling like these Zoom classes that I'm teaching are incredibly productive, in some ways more productive than the in-person thing, just because of the focus, energy, and the just looking at it as like not a second-rate alternative, but as being the real thing. So that's been good.
Okay, so let's talk about the new album. So what was the idea behind the album? Was there an initial inspiration behind the music you wrote for the album?
Yeah, I mean, I think that at the time I was like kind of absorbing a lot of different influences and like sifting through stuff inside myself and just looking to continue the things like, you know, I'm proud of the previous record, Golden Age, and I felt like it set me on a path that I wanted to continue to go down and pursue. And this record, although it's a very different record, it's just like another stop along the road that continues, you know? So I started to make it as a quartet record, but then I decided that really I wanted to make it as a trio record and use the guitar to kind of fill it out with different overdubs. So I ended up, you know, going back to the studio and recording mandolins and banjos and different keyboards that I played, using different plugins afterwards to try and just kind of see what I could pull out of myself, see if there was a different way to tell these stories or these songs. At their core, they're simple songs, they're ideas, they're like little bits of inspiration that led me to different places, and everything that came after was like how to better tell those little stories.
Was it recorded completely before the pandemic, or was it a mix?
It was recorded, yes, completely before the pandemic, and it was finished before the pandemic. I'm trying to think when the last, it was even mastered before the pandemic. Like, you know, when the only thing that might have overlapped a little bit was the artwork. things like that. But other than that, yeah, completely a product of the before times.
So you decided to release it even though you weren't able to tour or to promote it. It was a conscious decision, I guess.
That's a tough call, right? I didn't know what to do because, you know, on the one hand, yeah, you would love to be able to tour your record and give it the give it what it deserves. You know, people hear the music live and then they get interested in the record and all those things. And I felt like I wanted to do that for the album, which I love. But it was also, you know, it's a product of a certain time, and it felt really weird to release it in an unknown, to release it a year from now. I don't know if that makes sense. I do have a second half of the album. I made two albums. They're like part one and part two. They're very connected, but it's all different music. So I will release that later. I'm not sure if it'll be after the pandemic. It might be another record that's released in the middle of it, in the midst of it. But there is more music to come that's finished as well, that is recorded in the before times.
There is a song called Fire in August in the album, which is very cinematographic, you know, like music behind a movie. Is that a way for you to compose those long songs, or is it, it has nothing to do with, you know, images?
No, it certainly does. Like when I'm writing, I need something like, you know, in pop music they talk about the hook, right? There's like, you know, this chorus that just comes in, and that's the core of the song, and everything else can kind of be built around that. Or if you write the verse first, it leads to this kind of destination. For me, writing instrumental music, like, I need a hook to write, but it's not necessarily a hook in the same way. It's not like necessarily a big chorus. It's just an idea of a core, and that can sometimes be an image, you know. In that song, it's like, I have my guitar. Can I play guitar?
Yeah, sure, go ahead. Usually the sound through Skype is not that good, but it's just to give an idea, yeah.
I get the idea, but the core of that song is like that.
Yeah, I love it.
For me, that's the core, and like juxtaposed against that, that kind of like hard rhythm is the long notes. You know, kind of like the sweetness against the that rub, you know, and that kind of suggested an image to me of I don't know what fire in August exactly means. It's like an energy. It's like I described it as like a big thing happening in a small town. It's like this kind of restless energy, you know. So to me, that's a certain imagery, and that helps me write. That helps me know what the song is about. That helps me, you know, have a vision for it, whether that be for a video or for artwork or for whatever. But it's like, yeah, images and sound and it all, even if no one sees the images, you know, it's just internal.
Yeah.
Or it's just the title. You know, that, I don't know. It resonates with me.
Yeah. What I love about this song especially is that the low riff you just played sounds like almost like a cello riff, you know. We could definitely imagine an orchestra playing that, and then on top of that you playing the melody. But it is mostly guitar, right, on that song?
Yes, but I love that idea. Now I want to do like an orchestral version.
Okay. Cool. there is a song called Big Hit, which is definitely more on the bluesy side at the beginning, and then after that it moved toward jazz. Was it improvised, or again, was it really written, every piece of the music was written like that?
That one's written until later on when the voice comes in. There's like a sample of a speaker. After that point, there's an improvised section. But then it's all written, and that one kind of comes from like that horn sample that you hear in there. Something about that, like it's that sample is a song from the, I think, 50s or 60s, you know, and something about it made me want to like play to it, but then have these kind of, do you know that, there's a Richie Bayrock quote, a great jazz pianist. He had a quote about like, everyone has like three or four songs in them, mm-hmm. and they just keep rewriting those songs in different ways. So for me, one of the songs that I know I have is like, I love this kind of twisty, turny, unexpected kind of thing where you mm-hmm. can kind of like take someone's expectations and kind of flip them on their head. You think it's one thing, then it becomes another thing. That's Sound of Surprise, that like, oh, you know, I love that both in someone's improvising or in composing or something about like surprising the listener. So that one has all these twists and turns, and it actually ends with a little kind of clip from a different song of mine, a song called Memorial. That's how we end Big Heat, which Memorial to me is like another one of those songs that I'm maybe rewriting, in that it's a twisty, turny kind of song with surprises. So they seem to fit together for me in my brain because mm-hmm. they were like of a kind. They were like, you know, brothers or sister songs, you know, in a way.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a specific method to compose, or it really depends on the idea you have, depending on each initial raw idea you have?
You know, sometimes it can be a painful process, but I have to just sit there and do it. You know, the more I do it, the faster it goes. It's like practicing. It's like a muscle. If I don't do it, it takes me a while to remember, oh, I know how to do this, right? But at its core for me, I have to have an idea. If I just sit there kind of blank, the odds are it's going to be a while before what I want comes. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes I have to search for that idea. But once I have the idea, I can kind of start crafting it, and it never turns out exactly how I envisioned, but I start, you know, to change and adapt to it. But it just really helps me to have some sort of an idea. And that could be like you said, with an image or whatever, something that's like a core. I could say, you know, I want a song that's like slow and gentle, but then there's some sort of like, I'm almost hearing this like high slide, this like whoosh that happens somewhere in there. And maybe when that happens, the band pauses, you know? So that's all I need to start. Now I can start writing a piece, right? I just have to write until I can get to that whoosh stop. Or it could be I'm hearing a march and the bass is playing low notes, and above that, the guitar is playing like these kind of high chords that contrast with the march. Maybe they're kind of rubato against the static pulse of the march.
Mm-hmm.
Now I can start to write that. It helps if I have an idea that I really like and believe in, you know. But maybe as an exercise, I'll just try to write to an idea and see what happens. Definitely the more I do it, the stronger it is. When I don't do it for a long time, I get rusty.
Mm-hmm. And what is the how do you interact with other musicians for the record? Do you write everything down and say, okay, here guys, this is what you should play and that's it? Or is it open or only a certain portion of songs?
That's a great question. I think a lot of jazz musicians just give people the sheet music and mm-hmm. then they just let them play whatever they want. Whereas a lot of the, you know, I've worked a lot in the pop rock world, and there people have very specific ideas for what they want from each instrument. I think I kind of bridge the two things where, you know, I bring in the music, I hear what people naturally do, and then I kind of, like, as if I were a record producer, I say, okay, cool, for that B section, can you go from the cymbal to the hi-hat and back, something like that? Mm-hmm. Or I might kind of try and find a way to explain the dynamics in a way, or can we hit this thing together? What if the bass played up high for that part? Things like that. I have general ideas that I try to suggest to the players so that they can make them their own, mm-hmm. as opposed to like writing it out and saying, play exactly this. And there's a time and place for that too. And then there's always a time and place for them to do whatever they want. And, you know, my favorite players are the ones that know how to bring music to life. So it's like, you don't have to tell them anything. They're going to know how to bring it to life. But if you have a vision for it, it might help to explain your vision so that they can do their best.
Mm-hmm. And how was it recorded then? So it was after everyone is okay about the song, you hit record and bang, or was it more produced than that?
Yeah, no, we did approach it like a jazz record. So we had played a few, we had played shows, we knew the music, we knew how to play it live, and we went in and we recorded it as a trio. And then the more like production stuff is all stuff that I went back and I played to the improvised trio, kind of more raw stuff, and I added some layers here and there, you know, maybe swells on a keyboard, maybe, you know, some slide guitar, maybe, you know, just to help. I just wanted to tell the stories in a slightly different way than I had done before. Mm-hmm. You know, my past album barely had any overdubs on it. This one, I tried to do more. For my next project, I don't know. You know, maybe it'll just be an acoustic guitar and me, you know?
Regarding guitar, remember when we first met, it was in Montreal in 2016, and Bruno Pelletier-Bacquart introduced us together. So I thank you, Bruno, for introducing me to Nir again. And it was, I just rewatched the interview to prepare for this one. And you said, and you had, I think, the Strat you have here still right by you at the moment. And you said, oh, this is my first guitar and I'm still playing it. So, it was kind of a surprise for me, because usually the first guitar you get is not the one you keep on playing, I don't know, 15 or 20 years after that. So it's still your love at first sight guitar, right?
Yeah, I mean, I love this guitar. I think it has a lot of my personality in it. I got it when I was 13 years old. It's not an expensive guitar, but you know, it just keeps getting played more and more and more and more. I've been playing this for hours a day for, you know, over 20 years. So it has a lot of life in it. I think it absorbs, you know, guitars that get played a lot, they absorb some of the personality of there. And it's, you know, it's a one, I think, as far as I know, I'm the only person that's ever owned this guitar. So it has a lot of my personality in it. And I don't know, we work well together.
Okay. And she's not jealous regarding the other instrument behind you?
You know, I play the other instruments, you know, I play them and I enjoy them. But whenever I go back to my guitar, it's like that instant connect. It's like home.
Okay.
Like coming home. You know, you can go on tour and stay in beautiful hotels and see beautiful places, but when you walk through your front door to your home, you're like, oh, I'm home. That's how I feel with this guitar. And I think I'm really lucky to have that, because not everybody has that. Some people are still searching for their home. So at least with this guitar, I found that.
So that's the only guitar we hear on the record then? Or the main guitar?
That's certainly the main guitar. All the trio stuff was recorded with that. What else did I play? Like I said, I played a lot of other instruments. I played banjo, I played mandolin. I might have played a little pedal steel, maybe a little lap steel. I played theremin. But in terms of guitars, no, there's acoustic guitars. There's a Goodall acoustic. There's maybe this baritone acoustic got used. There's a Jerry Jones electric sitar. There's a Dan Electro Berry guitar. A Richard Hears archtop, a Marquion Strat is on there somewhere. What else is on there? Oh, a James Valentine model Ernie Ball. That's actually playing, that's the guitar that might be featured most after the Strat. It plays the melody on the first song. That's the James Valentine Ernie Ball.
And what did you use to get your tone on the record?
I used, you know, what I typically do is I play through my pedals and I go to one of several amps that I usually like. For the recording, I used two amps. So the signal was split and it went into two amps and we recorded them both. One is just a very simple Fender Deluxe 65 reissue, which is like a kind of a workhorse amp that I, you know how to get my sound out of it. It's like, again, not too fancy, but I really like it. And the other one that's kind of the secret weapon is a Plexi Marshall. That's like my best amp. You know, I have some other cool amplifiers, like an old AC30 and a Matchless, but the Marshall is definitely like the coolest thing I have. It's a 69 Super Trem, 50 watt Plexi Marshall. It just kind of, it just rips. So I'm using that on the record, and that's going into a Pine open back cabinet that actually belongs to Adam Rogers, another guitar player who you might know. It was a cab of his. I have a cab that I like, but I, you know, used this on a gig once, and I was like, this cab is perfect for this amp. So, yeah. So for the record, I was like, hey, can I borrow that cab? And yeah, he was nice enough to let me borrow it. So.
Okay. And it is, so the cabs, the guitar cabs are recorded through regular mics and stuff like that.
Yeah, I have like specific mics that I like. You know, I think we used the Sony C37 as the main mic on the Marshall, and probably an RCA 44 as the main mic on the Fender. And then they both probably had like second, slightly brighter mics, like maybe a... like a 247 was probably on one of the amps. Maybe we put another ribbon up for the Marshall, like maybe a, just a Royer or something. I don't remember exactly what we did. I probably have it in the session files.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, after so many years of recording, you know, mostly as a sideman, but also for myself, I kind of know what mics I like. I know what mics and where to put them and like how they work with certain different preamps. And you know, as a studio, somewhat of a studio guy, you find what works for you.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that way you can kind of go into the studio, set up fast, and like be happy with your sound pretty fast, so you don't have to agonize over you know, getting it the way it sounds in your head. I figured that out over time. It's taken a while.
So when we hear overdriven tones on the record, it might come from pedal, but it might also come from the Marshall, for example, or the amps are basically clean or kind of clean.
Everything's a little broken up. Mm-hmm. I don't know if we talked about this the last time, but like the way I have my stuff set up is that like I have a couple of boost pedals, like a Tube Screamer and a Klon KTR, and they're kind of turned up to the point where the amp would be breaking up. You know, like this Lux, for example, like I like it because I can get a break, I can start to break up at not a super loud volume. Mm-hmm. The Marshall is a little different, but I still, for this recording, because I was using them both at the same time, the pedals were set in a certain way. But the thing that I do is that my volume is not all the way up. If my volume was up, you would hear more breakup.
Mm-hmm.
But I try to keep it down and kind of float around the edge of the breakup so that I'm somewhere between like just barely starting to break up clean and like, you know, it's breaking up a bit. You know, if I turned all the way up, it'd be like, oh yeah, this is really breaking up.
Mm-hmm.
So I just like having that control. It's like you're kind of dialing in the amount of breakup that you want. And also you get a little bit of treble bleed, you know, from having the volume not all the way up. So that's kind of nice and warms it up. And like sometimes people ask, like, are those different pickups or, you know, how are you getting a warm jazz sound? It's kind of by controlling the treble bleed and controlling the breakup with my volume knob going through this kind of set of pedals that I figured out works for me. And those are always on. The Tube Screamer and the KTR are just always on.
Okay. And the amps we hear on the record, it's either the Deluxe or the Marshall, or it is a mix, or depending on what you mixed on the record?
It's a blend, yeah. Two amps, two mics per amp. So the mixing engineer had to make some decisions, and we talked, figured out the blend that was best. But they're all in there somewhere.
Okay.
You know,
when you listen back to, are you able to listen back to your album, or once it is done, and you just want to play it on the road, but you don't ever listen back to your album because you hear the mistake or the change, the things you would like to change?
I hate to admit it, but yes, it's difficult for me to listen.
Okay.
It's difficult for me to listen because, you know, it's like, it's so personal and you're evolving.
Mm.
You're a different person than you were a year or a month ago or whenever you started making the record. And even though you're proud of it and you believe in what you had to say, you would do it differently today.
Yeah.
But that's the point. So, you know, I don't love listening to my old albums. That's just a personal thing. But sometimes I hear something back, you know, someone else is playing it right here, and I'm like, oh yeah, I like that. But I'm always, I just want to do the next thing.
What are you listening at the moment? Any stuff you discovered recently, you know, the music that could hit you in your face and say, oh my god, that's what's your latest discovery?
My latest artist that I really am enjoying is a singer-songwriter named Christian Lee Hudson. He has a pretty new album out. It's just really good. Like, his songs are they're just like these little stories that he really succeeds in telling. You know, he has like these small narratives that, like, I don't know, I feel like when I write my jazz instrumental music, I'm attempting to do the same thing. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to tell a story, just not with words. And he tells these beautiful stories, and it's just well produced, and everything sounds good, and it's just, it's really sets up a mood, a vibe, you know, a feeling. So I've really enjoyed his newest record.
Mm-hmm. You are based in Brooklyn, so right next to New York City. What about the scene of incredible jazz guitar player, in fact, jazz musician in New York City? Do you have a lot of interaction with them, or everybody is doing his own thing and basically it's just a base for you, but you play all over the world, but not really especially in New York City, or you don't have any interaction with other musicians?
Do you mean right now, during the pandemic, or in general?
Both, let's say.
In the pandemic, you know, less than I would normally have, because there's no clubs that we can go hang out. Mm-hmm. But I have, of course, many friends that are musicians, and we are all still close and hanging out. Great guitar player Mike Moreno.
Yeah.
I'd be familiar with, you know, we talk and we hang out and have dinner sometimes. And we were just saying, like, we're going to get together and play this week. You know, so that'll be, like, one of the first times that, like, someone's come over here, or I've come to someone's house just to play. Because it didn't feel safe until recently. Now it feels like we can do it. We'll open the windows. It'll be cool. It'll be fine. And that'll be so fun. But yeah, a lot of my friends are musicians, and, like, New York is definitely a meeting place. Mm-hmm. We do all on the road and do our tours, and then we come back, and when we're home, we're delighted to see each other. But sometimes some of your good friends, you don't see them for a long time, and then all of a sudden you show up at, you know, Charles de Gaulle or whatever airport, and you're like, hey, it's everybody's here. You know, it's like we're all here. Or something, and that's really fun.
I did a couple of interviews with Mike Moreno. In fact, I did one with Mike a couple of weeks ago, right in the middle of the pandemic, and it is always a pleasure to meet him. In fact, once he was in Paris, he came right here in my showroom in Paris. So hopefully next time, and let's hope you can start to travel again and you will come to Paris. I hope to have you also here at the showroom to do a guitar in hand interview, right?
That'd be great. Yeah, I would love that.
Mm. What are the other projects you have in store for the rest of the year and for 2021?
Well, it's kind of based on what's possible. But, you know, while I'm home, I'm doing a lot of recording, right? People send me recordings to play on. So I played on two albums for Scott Kinsey, which were really cool. I'm doing an album with a band that has one record out. It's a co-led band called Band of Other Brothers. So that's Jeff Babko, Jeff Coffin, Keith Carlock, and Will Lee. And we have one album out called City of Cranes. And we're doing our second album in the pandemic just by sending each other files.
Okay.
So it sends out a demo, then Keith plays drums, then Will plays bass, then Jeff plays piano, and then lastly, Jeff and I record our parts. Jeff Coffin and I record our parts. So that's been cool. That's really exciting. I'm trying to do a solo album of just solo guitar. I've written some of it. I need to, once I get going, like I said earlier about the writing, like, I could probably do it in 2 days, you know. Mm-hmm. I have a vision for it, but with everything that's going on, sometimes it's like, it's hard to know when to seize that moment, because, mm-hmm. you know, we don't know how long this is going to last, you know, so it's hard to time it. You can't time it, you know, maybe just when it feels right, you do it. Mm-hmm. Or maybe you have to push yourself to make it feel right.
And is it going to be an electric guitar solo album, or acoustic, or both? You don't know?
I think it's going to be an acoustic guitar album.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah. Mm. That's what I'm thinking of. Lullabies. I started writing these acoustic guitar lullabies.
Nice.
So that's probably the next thing. And then I'm sure there's many artists that I work with that are just dying to get out there again. Like my friend Keon Harold, who I tour a lot with, is working on new music. We did a live album that hasn't been released yet. You know, we have a lot of material for a live album that we recorded over a week's residency at a club in San Francisco. And I think he's going to release that during the pandemic, and we'll tour after. An artist that I work with named Ben Platt had a Netflix special that I played on come out earlier in the pandemic, and I'm sure that there's more music in the works and more touring in the works when this is over.
Mm-hmm.
But since we don't know when that is, in the meantime, you know, compose more, play more, connect with people more in the ways that are possible right now, and enjoy that as the unique, you know, wonderful thing that, you know, maybe you wouldn't have made enough time for in the previous days.
Mm. It's great to hear that you are very busy in those strange times. So as a conclusion, what would be the advice you would give to musicians who are watching this?
General advice or advice for the pandemic?
I mean, you seem to have a super high level of energy. You keep smiling and everything. So how do we do that? I mean, we are going through very dark times, and here you are all smiling, full of projects. How do you do it? What do you smoke, Nir?
Well, believe me, no, we are going through dark times, and I'm very, very aware of it. But I also can't do anything about it other than try to just bring some good energy to it. So, like, you know, it's not all about music, right? Like, giving free lessons felt good. I volunteered for Meals on Wheels. That felt good. That's delivering food to the elderly, you know, who can't leave their houses, you know. Tonight, I'm making calls to kind of help elect candidates that I think will lead my country better than it's been led in these past years. So, you know, there's like some volunteering that's feels good to help out where you can, because, you know, it is a hard time for people.
Mm-hmm.
Teaching, you know, even though I'm not teaching for free anymore, has been great, because it's like, I know people really need the help right now, so I'm just trying to give 110% to the lessons, and that feels really good, and it's exciting for the student and for myself. We're all like, we get to the lessons and we're both like, yeah, you know. And it doesn't have to be all about music right now. This is a time when, like, you know, we feel like we're in a little holding period about music. So maybe you're cooking more, maybe you're reading more, maybe you can find things that in your previous time you didn't have enough opportunity to do at the level that you wanted to do it. You know, the list is endless, but I don't set my you know, I have, of course, the lofty goals. Like, of course I want to, you know, learn every song I've ever wanted to learn, and like by the end of this I want to have like 25 million new compositions and all that stuff. Great, like those are the big goals, and maybe I'll get part of the way there, but it's not really about the destination, it's just being on the right path. You know, if you feel like you're moving in the right direction, that feels really good. And even in this, you know, bleak time when people are sick and maybe your loved ones are, you know, struggling, and your friends, if you're at least kind of moving in the right direction in one way, it feels good.
Mm-hmm.
If I got up early and I practiced for an hour, that feels good to me. You know, it's a small victory, and I'll take those when I can get them.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Thank you very much for your time, Nir. It was a pleasure to be able to talk to you. Congratulations again for releasing great album, and it is full of very intriguing jazz music, and it was really a pleasure for me to go through the album deeply to prepare for the interview, and advise all the people listening or watching this to go check out the album, and hopefully you will be able to play it live. Yeah, and the cover is beautiful. I love it. And yeah, it's great. Yeah, it looks like you are an angel or something like that. I love it. Yeah.
Oh man, thank you. Yeah, we had fun designing it with my friend Roland LaFox, great illustrator. We kind of like, you know, got together and plotted out a vision for it.
Yeah.
So thanks for checking it out. Thanks for having me on the show. It's been a pleasure to chat. And like anytime, let's keep doing it. Let's keep getting together, and maybe we incorporate some guitar.
Yeah. Next time you are in Paris, for sure you will come here and we'll do a guitar in hand interview. Okay.
Can't wait, man. Thank you, Pierre.
All right. Thank you very much for your time again, Nir. Bye-bye.
Ciao. Bye.
Pour le prix d'un magazine, abonnez-vous à la chaîne Guitare pour accéder aux vidéos intégrales. For the price of a magazine, subscribe to the Guitar Channel to access the full videos.